Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets, and this specifically More Than Money. Today, we are joined by entrepreneur and talent acquisition professional with 15 plus years experience in the recruitment industry, Colleen Pelly. Colleen is the founder and CEO of The Linchpin Company, a full service people operations group offering custom recruitment and consulting services. Having worked for major brands such as Tesla and Lululemon, she gained experience in full cycle recruitment from entry level to executive level roles in developing and executing training programs. Her vast experience from her time in corporate recruitment helped fuel what was a side hustle into a fully incorporated, homegrown, multi-million dollar business. I know that because she told me before we started recording. And today we are going to chat with Colleen on everything related to recruiting, consulting, and how companies can benefit from using professional services to help grow their business from the inside and out. So whether you are a candidate or you are a company hiring, you will have something to take away from Colleen today. Colleen, thank you so much for being on More Than Money.
Thank you. Please follow me around all the time.
Yes.
That was great.
We're going to pump you up and hype you up. And for everyone back home, we have a lot of Canadian listeners. Colleen is a Canadian citizen from outside Toronto, living in Vancouver here in Nashville. And there's only one thing that separates Colleen from partying down on Broadway today. And that's this interview.
Yeah,
so
let's go.
I feel like we really got to knock this one out. All right, let's talk about this. So you're no stranger to this work. I talked about it in the intro.
Yeah.
You know, you worked for Lululemon, you worked for Tesla.
Yeah.
You're the director of talent acquisition prior to that with two large recruiting companies. And then you founded Linchpin Co., which we'll get into Linchpin Co.
Yeah.
But one thing I want to come out right from the gate is, what is something either a candidate or a company wouldn't know about the recruiting space? So like, give me some trading secrets that we would not know at all, whether it relates to a candidate or a company hiring. What do you got for us?
Yeah. Okay. Great question. The first thing that comes to my mind on the candidate side is that companies pay me to help them hire for their teams, and candidates or job seekers, if you want to call them that, they don't pay anything.
Okay.
And so I think a common misconception in the recruitment industry is that candidates need to pay for a professional recruiter's help. And that's not true. We love you because you help us get money from clients, but they're not paying me upfront.
Interesting. It's almost like real estate. So if someone's buying a property, they're not paying the real estate agent.
Right.
But if you're selling the property, you are. So use the, if you're a candidate, it's an absolute no-brainer to use a resource.
Yeah. Okay. Like, we're here to help you. And then, so yeah, like, let's say, I don't know, I'll use one of your sponsors so you don't, White Claw is hiring me. Yeah. I would have a candidate who I think would be a great fit. And then I don't get paid until I place someone, and then White Claw pays me. So the candidate's just there to get help and get a new job.
Okay. Curiosities are driving me. Now, if you are a candidate and you are interested, we'll go into some of the tips and tricks on this episode.
Yeah.
But if people wanted to reach out to a recruiter, I feel like that's something that's often said, but people are like, well, how? Like, how do you reach out to a recruiter? How does someone reach out to you? How does it work?
Yeah. I mean, our Instagram and our website and our email. And I think LinkedIn is probably a very common resource as well, but it's just a basic email. So at Linchpin, we have like a database. So I have a link that I send people who reach out.
Okay.
And it essentially just gathers like who you are, what you're looking for, what you love. Do you want me to keep it anonymous or not? Because obviously some people are currently employed when they're looking for a job.
Yeah.
So it gives us information to kind of market them out. But I think the best way, just reach out directly. I'm here. I answer every single message.
Interesting. Yeah. So if they reach out directly, it's not like they need this like perfectly tailored resume or cover letter.
Just to a recruiter? No. It's just like, hey, Colleen, or hey, Lynchman, yeah. I'm looking for a new job. I'd love to talk to you about what that looks like.
Okay. That is a misconception. I thought you had to like really sell yourself on a golden platter. Okay. But you did talk about the fact that if you are a candidate right now, you are interested, reach out to Colleen. But if you're a company that's looking to fill a position,
yeah.
that's where the money is made.
Yeah.
You know, more than money, trade secrets. There's always a common theme, even in more than money episodes. How much are they paying or does it change? Like what are companies paying for a service like
yeah, this? Yeah. Great question. So it's a standard rate. So it's 20% of the base salary of the person I'm placing.
Okay.
And so it comes from like, it ranges depending on what the base salary is.
Yep.
We do two sort of options. So there's like a retained model
okay.
where if, you know, you hired me, you'd pay 1/3 upfront to get the service started. And then the second 2/3 don't come till after I place someone.
Interesting.
That's for our like executive search side okay. and you know, like the market mapping, and it's just a very niche, different type of search. So that's where that retainer comes from. But on the majority of the time, we have something that we call like contingent recruitment. And okay. so you're not paying me. It's contingent on me doing work.
Actually.
So doing and I'm not going to make the money till we make a placement. We do have in our paperwork, there's something called an engagement fee that if you cancel the search, we have like a small fee to cover our time.
Sure.
It's not like a penalty. It's just like yeah. for the job posting fees and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But for the most part, really like you're working with us, we place someone, then we'll invoice you.
Interesting. So okay.
I have to perform before you'll pay.
You have to perform. That makes perfect sense. Okay, cool. Yeah. We're going to get into a lot of the details. The second you said executive search, of course, my brain went immediately to talk to me about executive compensation for what you see, because you see all the numbers, you interact with the people that make the decisions. So we're going to hear from you what we don't already know, but I want to get into the start of the Lynchpin Co. I think it's really cool that on maternity leave, this is when you started using some of your free time to create this vision and this strategy. And there are so many people that listen to this show that want to start a side hustle, that right. want to create a strategy. Maybe it might be during maternity leave, or it might be during a vacation, or it might just be the weekends and nights from their normal day-to-day job. So talk to me a little bit about what did you do to capitalize on this time? What are some right. of the best things you did? Maybe the worst things. And for someone that is sitting at home, what advice you have if they want to get their thing going?
Yeah, I think that it started as a side hustle pre-mat leave. So I was working in-house and I was very transparent with the tech company I was working for and was just like, I'm trying to do something on the side within recruitment. And they were just like, as long as you don't do tech recruiting while you're working for us, we don't care. And if so, that
very is honest of you.
Of course. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Have you met me?
Because yeah. I got to imagine that 95% of candidates you work with are not going to their company and saying, hey, just so you know, I'm looking for
I know.
Job,
I very honestly, and I had a very great manager at the time who was supportive of my dreams and my vision. And she was like, yes, I think as long as it doesn't affect the KPIs you're working on with me and you don't hire in our industry, I don't care.
Okay.
And so that's how it started. And then I went on mat leave, and just the way the universe is, I got like 10 clients out of nowhere. Like it was just like, I had a baby and then all of a sudden so many people wanted to work with me. And so I decided just not to take maternity leave and start like make Lynchpin go full time.
Okay. So I think the biggest issue people would have back home, taking a little bit outside of your industry, but applying it to almost any industry, is you 10 clients fell into your lap. How, why, and if someone's trying to acquire 10 clients, no matter what they do, whether they own a media company like the studio we're in now, or they're doing recruiting, how'd you land those clients so quickly?
Yeah, it does feel like it didn't just happen. It does. Yeah. It felt like that because of the timing. But when I started Lynchpin, it was like a year later, it was just really part-time.
Okay.
I reached out to everyone I knew.
Interesting.
Right? And it's like recruitment, the whole point of it is relationship building and communication. So candidates I placed 10 years ago, you know, checking in, I've started my own thing. I don't know if your company works with anyone. And then at that time, two clients I used to work with reached out. A candidate I placed a long time ago who started his own company, he reached out. So it was all just my entire BD strategy secret is just keeping in touch with people.
Okay. And that's one interesting thing too, is on LinkedIn, you know, it's very tough to build a following on LinkedIn. I saw on LinkedIn, you have 8,000 followers.
It's not that great.
When you say, no, it is. It's great. It's great. It's really great. When you have, again, on LinkedIn, it's not like it's really not this like influencer driven.
Yeah.
8,000 followers is a ton. I bet you're in the top, I'm just guessing, but I bet you're top 20% of all humans followed on LinkedIn at 8,000. Seriously.
That's very kind.
And so my question is then, when you're reaching out to people, if people are looking for an exact strategy, are you going back to like old email bases? Are you just using like LinkedIn? Do you have any tools you use when you to get those first 10 clients?
So people I used to work like old managers was a really great start because they've worked with me and seen who I am and how I operate. Because when I started Lynchpin, it was just me. Now I have a little team, but it was just me at the beginning. And so I was like, who knows what it's like to work for me or with me? And so I started there. LinkedIn's the majority of it, or just like personal network. And now it's at the point where if I do a great job for you, like if you and I are working together and I do a great job, you're going to have no problem telling your friend who needs help with recruiting about me.
100%.
And so a lot of our new business has come from, oh, we did great work. They referred us to three of their friends and then it just keeps coming in. But I think at the beginning, I was very lucky to have supportive people in my life. But one of my favorite stories about the beginning of Lynchpin was there was a cannabis company I used to work for. And when I left, Lynchpin was part of my job then too. And when I left, they became a client. And so like I quit and this, he's not there anymore, but the CEO at the time very kindly was like, okay, well, you're amazing. Let's take these last 20 roles you're working on and just switch them over to commission.
That's wild. That's interesting.
So that was a very like, it felt so nice.
Yeah. Because the whole dynamic of like in-house versus outsourcing is a huge topic in so many different areas within a company. Of course, recruitment being one of them. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
And that's a misconception too, I would say, is companies who have in-house recruiters still work with external agencies. So they may have a full team of recruiters, but they still have like niche roles or they're very busy at a particular time. So a lot of our clients have full recruiting teams.
Yeah. And that goes for so many departments, like even HR, they have in-house HR, but they outsource consulting, marketing. I know so many groups have in-house marketing, but work with a marketing agency. That's consistent through and through. Okay. Talk to me about this. This is more of a trading secrets question, but in the recruitment industry, how wild is this? There are probably some candidates out there looking to find a job. And now a recruiter of a recruiting firm is going to tell you a little bit about recruiting position. When you worked for some of the large companies, how does earnings work? Because I've heard it's a very tough grind, but in recruiting in general, you can make a shit ton of money if you're a recruiter. Is there some truth to that? What's it look like?
So in-house, you're a little more capped. But on the agency side, so like having, it's commission-based. So even how I pay the recruiters on my team, you still get a base salary. So I, like some companies are more generous than others on that. But like at the end of the day, you're still living in a city and you have to pay your mortgage and those things. But on the commission side, depending on who you work for, like at Lynchpin, we're uncapped. So like they can just earn and earn and earn and earn and earn. And so like if they're bringing money in, great for me. I'm happy. I want everyone to do well. And so I think that the misconception, I guess, like, or I guess the benefit to being in-house is you're going to be paid the same base salary regardless of what happens. Whereas on the agency side, if we're not busy, you're not working on anything.
Okay. That makes sense.
That's not happening anymore. Thank goodness. But at the beginning, when I was starting, it's like, oh no, you know, we only have like six roles we're working on. Then what happens when they're closed and we're not there anymore, which is great. Great problem to have to be busy. But I think the pro to being in-house is sort of consistency, stability. But on the outside, you can make a ton of money in recruitment. And I think every company needs help with hiring. So like a lot of our clients would be maybe startups who don't have a recruiter and they're like, can you just help us build everyone? And which is great. But we do have a few clients who we hired all of their recruiters for them. And then we kind of like put ourselves out of a job.
Okay, cool. Give me an idea of this. So someone that works at Aerotech or Robert Half, that's what's called Robert Half, right? Those are two of the largest recruiting firms, I think, in the world. Like a good recruiter within a good niche that's crushing it out of the ballpark. Give me an idea of what one of those people would make
in their like first year.
And let's just say like
if they're a few years in, you're making more than 200K.
Like 5 years, you're making more than 200K. And does it work similar? Like you build your book, so you're building your commission, so you're going to keep growing.
Because a lot of the time too, so I mean, different agencies have different operating principles, but if I brought in a client, then it would be my client. And so repeat work typically would come. So like if I brought in Trading Secrets or Rewired, then it's like, if I get another role from you, I get it.
Perfect.
And it's my commission. And so there's benefit to that relationship account management side. Some companies are different where they have recruiters and account managers and they don't get the repeat business. So it kind of depends on who you are.
But understood.
You're making a good amount of money if you can keep in touch with people.
I love it. All right. I want to keep going into the Lynchpin Co. because I think what's really cool at Lynchpin is that you, my understanding is you self-funded this. And so that's a really unique story, especially to our listeners who are looking to self-fund their own businesses. But are there any different tactics you use to get additional capital? Were there different grants out there? Were there different opportunities where you could raise capital? Anything from a small business perspective, woman-led company that you did that other people should know about?
Yeah, I think two things, just like one thing that comes to my mind really quickly is like, don't expect to make a ton of money right away. So like, you know, everyone seems like you went out on your own. It must be. And you're like, no, it's really hard at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I'm very lucky I'm in a relationship. So I had double income and I had help from him. But that was probably one thing that comes to my brain immediately. But there are hundreds of thousands of dollars in government grants available to small businesses. So I know this more powerfully in Canada, obviously being in from Canada, but you get to apply, you just kind of like niche down. So like I'm a woman run business and like, what's my industry? What does that look like? And there's all these grants you can apply for. And for context, I've probably applied to 300 and I've gotten three.
Wow. So okay. 1% success.
Not great, but you know, we were able to get enough money to do a brand photo shoot with a photographer I otherwise wouldn't have been able to afford.
Cool.
And we got our website redone and like, we've been able to do things that have helped me grow that didn't come out of my pocket. The other piece of advice I would just say would be, you have to like prioritize on what you're spending your money on first. Okay. So like, you know, at first you have to spend money on incorporating and getting a domain name and that kind of thing, but being lean.
Yeah.
I did everything and I still am doing quite a bit. I think that's what's funny about being a business owner is you can go from being an expert in recruitment to like, now I'm the CFO and the head of tech and marketing and
wearing all the hats.
Sure.
Give me an idea of this though. People back home that are looking at either getting a grant in Canada or the United States.
Yeah.
If they're going to do 300 applications, that's a lot of time. 1% success rate isn't the best, but you got three.
Hey, we're
getting there. You got there. You're swinging and you hit. But give some an idea of as far as like economics with cost benefit to return. I mean, on grants, are you getting a couple $100? You get $1,000, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions? Like what?
The smallest one I got was $2,000 and the largest one was $150,000.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that's definitely worth your time.
Well, and I think one of the things that's useful there is a lot of the beginning is like you can use the same answers. So it's like, why was your business started? Or like, where did it come from? Like, what is your industry? Like those pieces are the same. And then when it differentiates, you can spend the time. But a lot of it is like, I've already written this.
Okay.
It's just who Lynchpin is and why we're different and all those.
So let's get into this industry a little bit. Okay. So right now, United States unemployment's at 3.9%. And so that is, that's pretty darn low when you look at historically what unemployment's like. I'm bummed that I don't know this off the top of my head in Canada. Is it pretty low in Canada right now?
Yeah, I think it like differentiates by province, but everywhere like across North America right now, we're in a pretty good spot.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as someone that runs a recruiting agency, right?
Yeah.
For candidates and for companies, what is something you're seeing within the industries? Like, are people hiring right now? Are there certain industries that are hiring more? Yeah. What are some things more than just knowing the unemployment rate, if, whether we're a company looking to hire or we're a candidate looking for a job, we should know, but we can learn from someone who's a CEO of a recruiting firm?
Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to mind is when you're kind of depends on, like, if you look on LinkedIn, I feel like you're seeing layoff, 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 all these mass layoffs.
Yeah.
I will say it, we are busier than we've ever been and companies are, it's the hiring industry is booming right now. So if you're a candidate who's been laid off or you're a part of something, like, know that there's hope and there's a ton of opportunity. So that's the starting point. I think from a, there are industries that have been affected, like we talked about this with tech. It's kind of been hit. And I think like, if you go back to 2022, it was like the software engineer war and everyone was fighting for everyone and giving these crazy sign-on bonuses and things like that. And
what year was that?
Like 2022, I feel like was.
Just for, let me pause you there. 2022, there's the crazy wars going on. Like what kind of sign-on bonuses are you seeing in the tech space at that point? Give me age, experience and a round of.
Would have 2 years of experience, like 24-year-old candidates getting, you know, $100,000 and $200,000 sign-ons.
That's
from
crazy.
Larger companies.
And like what type of bases are they making?
225.
With upside and bonus.
Yeah.
So you got kids, 24-year-olds are making $500,000.
Let's be clear. Those are like the major brands who can afford to do
those
that.
Those are like the ones we all know about.
So what's hard is we work even with like these incredible startup tech companies who are like, no, I can't give you an $100,000 sign-on. Nah. And so it got to like, when we talk about total compensation and culture and like, I think as you get older, what becomes important to you changes maybe.
Yeah,
but I think like there's a, who you're spending time with, what you're working on, what's the opportunity to grow? Those things matter in addition to compensation. And so I think from a recruiting perspective, it was always my job to sell the opportunity and being like, no, they're not going to pay you the same as a very large brand, but let's talk about why it's still a good idea.
Yeah. Cause you could also get equity in those deals.
That's right.
But the biggest thing that's changed is like when interest rates were at 0%, it was so easy for companies to deploy money towards tech companies because they needed to get a return. Now you have people sitting in checking accounts making 5 to 6%. The investment towards tech companies has decreased at a massive rate. So fast forward to 2024.
Yeah.
Those positions, and I'm sure those dollar amounts have decreased. Is that right?
I think I almost feel like the bar was raised so high
that
there's still expectation.
Yeah.
And so that's been challenging. But okay. I think like even thinking of the number of, if we're talking about software engineers specifically, we've hired way less over okay. the past couple of years. It's a much less hot
interesting
environment, or they're like changing their focus for sort of people who can do it all
okay.
instead of like really niche specific things. Like
yeah.
full stack developers versus like just a front end developer or something okay. like that. But more recently from a trend, I feel like cybersecurity has like, we've really picked up. I'm sure yeah. it's been around for a long time, but like yeah. all of a sudden we have tons of roles in that space this year.
Yeah. Which has that been makes like sense. An interesting. Because I feel like when you hear any type of hacking issue, yeah. it has such credibility to the company
yeah.
and their just overall PR. Let me ask you this, and then we'll, and for my candidates that are here, trust me, I will get into your questions. Those are coming. I got to let some of my curiosities regarding Linchpin and this whole industry move me in the direction that it's moving me. But I just think about the way that it is shifted with people hiring. And then you said you're still so busy, even in these times where yeah. unemployment's extremely low and most positions are full. I read an article recently, and I also stand by this thesis, that most people are getting paid more these days, not by staying with the same company, but by doing like a tic-tac-toe strategy. Is that at all part of what's keeping you so busy? And do you see that being successful? And tell me a little bit about your take on it.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think if you think back to, you know, my parents' generation, it was like staying at a company for a very long time was yeah. like very credible and loyal. And so depending on who you're working with, some people see job hopping as like flaky or yeah. what that could look like. But there is a reality that you could stay at a company, have an exceptional, outstanding performance review and only get 2% as a raise, right? Yeah. Like that could happen. But if I jump and I go to another company, I could get 20K more.
Immediately.
And so why wouldn't I do that? And so I don't see it as a bad thing. I think yeah. if you can speak to your why mm-hmm. in your recruiter to in the hiring process, being able to like speak to opportunity or what that meant or why you did it is useful. But yes, it's very true because typically you're going to be making more money when the market's changed and not every company does market increases on their salaries. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to get that maybe a cost of living raise. But yeah. if I go to another company, I can get cost of living plus.
Yeah. X. And we just talked about the layoffs, right? I think yeah. in that time, we learned a few things. One of the things we learned is that some of our jobs are very expendable, right? But yeah. I think conversely to that, we talked a little bit about that. I also think companies can be very expendable. And I think our generation, and especially the Gen Zs, are seeing that. And as a result of that, they're like, listen, the loyalty, I'm not seeing loyalty. We just saw these tech layoffs.
Right.
And as a result of that, my loyalty is limited to what you're willing to do for me, or the value I put on it, whether it's dollar amount or not. And so that's probably why there's a lot of movement in that space, which is also good for your industry.
It's great for me.
Right,
yeah. And
exactly.
I think obviously when we place someone at a company, we want them to stay there for a long time. So, yeah. you know, we have guarantees in place, like we'll do free replacements if you have to terminate them, that kind of thing. And so, okay. but there is a reality that staying at a company for a long time isn't necessarily the best strategy
okay.
to pad your bank account.
Okay. Got
yeah.
it. Interesting. All right. Well, let's get into Linchpin and some of the specifics on the recruiting process. I read an article that new positions take an average of 42 days to fill and that the hiring cycle can be around 60% shorter with an optimized recruitment process. So if someone is a candidate or a company is looking to fill the role, does this time frame seem accurate, 42 days? And if so, what does a recruitment company do, or specifically Linchpin, to reduce those days?
Great question. I think from a candidate perspective, a long hiring process is such a turnoff.
It's the worst.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you
yeah.
can apply and you don't hear back, or you have an interview and then you get ghosted. And yeah. I think there's no communication is part of the problem. You're not wrong. I think it might even be longer on average. I would say at Linchpin, we've gone out of our way to make sure we're an extended part of our clients' recruiting teams. And our job is to help you make your process more efficient.
Yeah.
And so our time to hire is like 33 days for, depending on the level of role, executive level search would be closer to 70.
Okay.
It's a different, but sort of typical full cycle VP and below is okay. 33 days. And so what we've done is in the intake meeting, like when you're starting the recruitment process and you're sort of doing a kickoff, getting super clear in that moment what the interview process is going to look like and pre-planning calendars. So okay. in 2 weeks, we're going to have candidates for you to meet. Let's get that out of your calendar now. And otherwise, you're going to have roadblocks. Like scheduling is the biggest roadblock.
Yeah.
And so I always tell my clients, the faster your team can be available, the faster we can keep moving. And so remembering that your candidates are going to leave that, whether you hire them or not, when those candidates leave that interview process, they're going to talk about their experience to other people.
That makes sense.
And so if you want to ghost, like so many people ghost. I think like that's one of the things we get feedback on quite a bit about why people love working with us is we almost over communicate.
Okay.
Regardless if there's an update or not.
Yeah.
You will always hear from us. Here's what's going on. And like as a candidate, I would much rather hear, hey, we don't have feedback yet, but I'm still thinking about you and I should have an update for you on Tuesday instead of me waiting a week and not saying anything.
Well, that's also huge because candidates here are hearing this and you know, you go through negotiating process and then you applied to a job that you haven't heard anything from 30 days. All of a sudden they come in the week after you just accepted and you had no communication.
Right. And it's so, like, okay, I don't want to work there anyway. Yeah. If you're not going
to
talk to me.
Right. Having someone, I think like a linchpin to do that is massive.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Let me ask you this before we get into some of these candidate questions.
Okay.
From like a competitor standpoint, there's a ton of recruiting firms out there. We've already mentioned two of the behemoths out there.
Yeah.
Do you guys at Lynchpin, like when you came up with a strategy, do you have a specific niche? How are you differentiating against competitors? Talk to me from a business leadership perspective, what that looks like.
Yeah, I think if you Googled it or you looked it up, there are so many recruiting agencies. And I think I have gone very far out of my way to not have a specific industry niche. And so what I mean by that is like there are companies who are construction recruiters or only tech recruiters or marketing recruiters, whatever that looks like. And we like to focus on purpose-led companies and purpose-driven people. That's sort of our little tagline, like recruitment with purpose. And so meaningful connection to people who are doing work that excites us, whose core values align with who we are and how we operate. If you can align with the people you're working for and what they're doing, that recruitment process is so authentic and so natural. And so we've been able successfully to sort of navigate a variety of industries. And I've also curated, my recruitment team across industry. So I am able to say, yes, we have a pipeline in tech with this recruiter.
Sure.
But even if you look at my personal background before I started Lynchpin, tech, cannabis, automotive,
Lululemon,
retail. So if you're great at recruitment, it really doesn't matter what it is. And so it's really about understanding your client's needs. And then I'll use what I can do and I will find someone for you. And so like, we can brag a little. We've never found a role we can't fill, which is great.
Yeah.
Humble brag. But I think it's really just about understanding your client and making that connection and that relationship. And in terms of how we're different, I feel like we're just so human-centric and we're here to really be a part of your team. And, you know, also we commit a percentage of our revenue each year to give back. Cool. And so like there's a philanthropic side that we get our clients involved with as well. So they get to be a part of feeling good and doing something for good, which is really nice. And the super high level way to put it is I think we genuinely care.
Okay.
And I think when you can stay the size of a boutique firm, but we also have the network of a larger company because of all of our history and our work experience. So we can give you the attention to detail of a boutique firm, but we're not going to forget about you and we are going to communicate with you and we care about your team and we want to hire for you. So the goal is to build the relationship and then have you keep coming back for years and years and years, right? Like they're long-term relationships.
Yeah, you've definitely carved out a specific, unique area within this space that I haven't heard that exists.
Right.
It's different than the competitors. It works and it's a success, but that's a great transition to some of your failures and mistakes.
Lots. Great.
Because my understanding is that you have a notepad in your phone or a paper one, I'm not sure, but you have a mistake notepad where you actually like write down your mistakes. So I mean, I got to put you on the spot if you're cool with it. Can you open this up and like actually, is it a notepad or on your phone?
It's a note.
It's a note on your phone. Okay. And so what type of mistakes? Give us a couple that you have on there. How also, like how often is this mistake notepad updated?
A lot.
Like daily?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What are some that are in there that are worth highlighting?
Okay. This is great. So the notepad is called GUIST, which is get your shit together.
Okay.
Okay.
This is a great move right here.
Okay. So a great example for small business owners who charge for their services. Okay?
Yep.
When you're speaking and you're asking people, so for instance, we charge 20% of the base salary for the people we're replacing.
Sure.
Okay. When you're talking with someone who's potentially going to work with you, just say that and shut up.
Okay.
So that was a piece of advice I was given. And at the beginning, the mistake learned was I would be like, but we could do 18 because I know you, or I was afraid. You need to be confident.
Yeah.
And as soon as I was clear and being like, here's when we need a retainer or it's always 20% or whatever that looks like, actually business got way better.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
One of my big mistakes was like, stop trying to make everyone like you. You know, that's another one that's on here. Maybe you're not for everyone and that's okay. That's
there is
on
a here. Wendy's or not Wendy's KFC case study of a item that was not performing well at all. And their actually strategy to get it performing was increase the price. The thought process was like, we could always decrease the price, but if we decrease it and it doesn't sell, we have no answers. If we increase the price, it's a different tactic. And it went bananas.
Right. If I'm confidently telling you what the price is, I know what I'm doing. I'm great at what I do. And here's what it costs.
Okay. Give me one get your shit together mistake you made. One more.
Okay. Oh my God. There's so many. Okay. I'll give you two. One is facts don't care about feelings. And so I have made some business decisions that I like kept people on, or I ended up doing a lot of work myself to cover for people because I just like care about people. I'm like almost too empathetic.
Yeah.
It's the problem. And so, but the reality is when you look at the numbers or you look at the facts behind something, like you have to, you're running a business. And so that was one of the big learnings, but like a very simple logistical one. One of the girls who works for me is very part-time. She has a few hours for me a week. She's on maternity leave now.
Okay.
And I didn't know because I'm not her main employer that there's a specific form I was supposed to send for, in order for her to get her EI on mat leave.
Okay.
So that's a great lesson learned. Like,
there you go.
Every day you're making mistakes.
Yeah. I like the idea of like everyone out there, put in your notepad, a get your shit together
section.
Yeah,
you just like talk.
and keep yourself accountable and hold yourself accountable.
Well, and it's good too. You can put, sometimes it's just quotes.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, like there's power in the pause is the one I learned about.
Yeah. A lot. Just, there's a lot of power in the pause.
I know, but you're hearing it now. I just can't stop talking.
I battle with that too. I like the facts. Facts don't have feelings, right?
Facts don't care about feelings.
I like that one too, because there are so many times if you're nervous about making a hiring decision or a firing decision or a vendor cut or whatever it is, just outline the facts. You don't have to over-explain. Just let the facts do their work.
Yeah.
Let's get into all the candidates that are listening to this that have all the questions in the world about everything as it relates to applying for jobs. Let's first start with this. Like, I hear there's so many crazy things out there you could do. You could copy and paste, you know, the job application to your resume. You could use the same words. There's cover letters. Like, people like feel like they're just putting their stuff, their application into a black hole. The list is endless, I think, in the whole idea of applications. What can people do to make sure that their application is brought to the top?
Yeah. One super quick thing I would say to everyone else who's in recruiting, just respond to all your candidates.
Yeah.
Even if they're a no. Like, it sounds crazy to me that that's like the bar.
Yeah.
Like, we're at just basically respond. So
just respond.
Please just answer.
Yeah.
People, like, they reply and they hear nothing. And it's clear communication is so important.
Yeah.
But on the actual application side, I think there is a reality in algorithms to a certain extent. Yes and no. Sometimes it's just who you know. So if you can like reach out to someone you know at a company and them introducing you, it's like more powerful than an application. But if you look at a job description, there'll be like keywords that stand out.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to dumb down my whole industry, but we're lazy as recruiters.
Okay.
And so if I'm given a job scope and I can match your resume to the things I'm looking for, it's very easy for me to make that connection.
Sure.
So obviously don't copy and paste the exact same thing, but there's a way to say, oh, they value this. How can I highlight that in my resume?
Got it.
Metrics are really powerful. So like talk about how you fixed X or you solved X or you increased X by doing this.
Facts.
Yeah. And then I think the other thing is don't be afraid. Like it's not arrogant to like talk about something you did really well.
Okay.
And so I think I'm probably like projecting myself, but like it feels hard to take credit for things sometimes. And it's like, no, here's something I did really well. I increased X by doing this. But you mentioned cover letters.
Yeah.
This is probably an unpopular opinion, but I think they're so dumb.
Really? Tell me why.
It's just like, hi, I'm Jason and I have this great experience and I'd love to work for your company. Like it just feels like you're, I don't know, sucking up to something. Like it's almost like, and I'll be very honest. So apologies right now. So I don't read them. I don't. Same with reference checks. Another unpopular opinion.
Okay. Cover letters, reference checks out the door.
Well, references can be useful. I will be honest with that. There are times where it has been useful, but for the most part, everyone can think of two people who will say nice things about them.
Yeah, for sure. So it's like, whatever.
I think that background checks are useful. And if they're in a driving role, you can do like driving checks. You can do credit checks are important depending on the industry you're working in. But an actual reference check, like probably you can think of two people you used to work with that will be like, yeah, Jason's great.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. So, let me ask you this then.
Okay.
I read an article that said college degrees are the eighth most important characteristic when interviewing candidates. And then the overarching theme of like degrees preferred, but some people might not have those degrees. What's your take on that? Do you think college is more important than the eighth important characteristic? And what characteristics do you think are the most important?
It's so funny. Like as a mom, my first reaction is like, well, I want my kids to go to school.
Yeah. You're like, it's number one.
But maybe again, another like controversial thing. I don't think it's super important.
Interesting.
Depending on what you're doing. Obviously there's some industries like you can't, I don't know if you have to be a dental hygienist, there's like education you have to get.
Sure.
But a lot of companies, my job in recruitment as well is to be your advisor and your coach. And so like a lot of companies will put like X degree or X years of experience.
Okay.
Because there's value in doing the job hands-on.
Interesting.
And so I think, yes, it's important depending on what and I think like you can take from it other things besides the degree. Like I think degrees are also important in helping people learn time management and how to show up to class on time and those kind of things. But no, I don't think it's the most important thing. I think you being able to speak to why you can do this job successfully and how you've done it before is more important than the fact that you went to school.
Okay. And you can supplement that with years experience. Yeah. And then again, more facts of your performance and what you've done and how you've done it.
And I think there's like a continuous learning thing as well. Like people who take those free courses on LinkedIn, like if you're just showing you love to continuously learn and grow, that's great. But you coming to me with 5 years of in-house active experience or no experience, but a degree.
Yeah. Whatever.
Who cares?
Okay.
Like the experience is going to outweigh that.
Interesting.
Oh, people are going to come at me for that.
Oh, well, no, I like it. You are doing it every day.
I know, people are not doing it every day.
So it's good to know. You said that sometimes like when you do an executive search placement, it could take companies, you know,
a little longer,
maybe even 70 days, more of an entry-level job. You do, you know, the days to deploy this and get it filled are much less than the industry standard at that like 20, 30 range.
Yeah.
But my question is from an executive standpoint, when you see compensation packages, what are they typically looking like? Is it more like base with huge upside? Is it equity? Is it sign-in bonuses? Like what is in an executive compensation package we might not know as either a company or a candidate?
Yeah, I think that, well, on the company side, they're very rarely posted. So any of our executive searches, like clients will like reach out to us. Either it's a confidential search.
Sure.
Or they're not going to just post it on LinkedIn. Like typically it's like you need to headhunt someone and like specifically find the industry and the person. So that's the starting point. So if you're a C-suite executive looking for a new job, reaching out to a recruiter is useful because you're not going to just see it on Indeed.
It's not going to be out there.
Yeah. But from a comp perspective, it's definitely a combination of a lot of things. And so a base salary, really high incentive on the bonus side for them performing and the company's performance increasing as well.
Okay.
And so the bonus structure is like, it's weighted in different ways, but it's like your job is to come in as a senior leader and like make the company do better. So if we do, you're going to get
paid
a ton of money.
Huge percentage.
And then obviously large companies, you get a chunk of equity, which is very useful. And then typically it's like a 4-year vesting period. So there's also like a retainer there. Like we're
going
to keep you here.
Okay. Yeah. Let me ask you this. What is in all your recruiting days, what is the highest total package? Of course, you don't have to say the company for confidentiality reasons, but the highest package you ever saw at an executive level.
550 plus 60% plus.
60% what?
Bonus. Sorry. 60% bonus opportunity. Yeah. Of the base. And then like a $1.2 million equity vesting over 4 years.
Okay, interesting.
Okay, but you know what I'd say about executive search that I think is more interesting is there's like funny things that people get added in that like—
Give me an example.
I won't say the company, but I worked at a company where we paid off someone's kids' student loans.
That was part of the
strategy. That was part of them getting on.
Interest. Yeah. So like that's a decision-making thing for an executive.
It was like, we really want this person.
Yeah.
And what else can we do to say, like at some point you can't give any more base, right? Like it's just like at some point that's the reality. And so, or like if you're relocating someone, you're relocating their family. And then in executive search, you're also like helping their kids sign up for hockey. And like, that's just like, you're kind of doing all of it, but it kind of depends on who the company is, but you can get very creative to like make people feel loved and appreciated and seen. But
okay. A lot of questions with that. Let's start with one. There's a lot of people that are listening to this that are corporate soldiers, that are the corporate jockeys that want to land these positions that you're recruiting for.
Yeah.
When you see these people, you know, and they're getting offered to have their student loans wiped out of their kids and all
that's
these
not normal.
Things.
It was just right. But it was funny.
But when I hear that, I'm like, you know, my natural instinct, especially when I was a banker, was like, okay, what the hell do I have to do to get there?
Right.
When you're meeting with these people, what is creating such massive value for them? Is it their education, their network? Is it like specific industry niche? Why is it that people are willing to give millions of dollars in equity, yeah, pay off loans, find their kids' programs? What is it about these people, would you say?
A lot of the time, it's like a situationally unique, like if someone's like going public.
Yeah.
So is there someone who's taken a company public before?
Okay.
So like that's been a scenario where it's like, we really need someone who's done this specific thing before.
Okay.
And so I like how these six companies have done it. Go get one of them.
Interesting. I think a good takeaway for me, at least for people back home, would be if there are these internal projects that like sound like a nightmare, actually those are the exact experience that your resume will need for you to get these big jobs.
Yeah. Like I think there's even at like the super executive level, like even at manager level, it'll be like, we need someone who's implemented this specific program and being able to talk about why you did it and what the learnings were. Like I love hearing what people did wrong. Like you talked about mistakes. Like talk to me about a time where you totally screwed something up. And what I'm listening for is actually just like, did you take accountability for your actions?
Yeah.
The clients we work with want people who like are integral and like, let's talk about what went wrong and then what'd you learn from it and what'd you do next, right?
Yeah.
Like people always think they have to have a perfect resume or like this perfect background. And like, I think a great recruiter will actually see a transferable skill set. And it being, that's my job to sell to the client on like why this person is actually great, even though on paper they might not match.
Okay.
Right?
Good. I mean, I think that's great. I'm going to go jump to the candidate right now.
Yep.
So the candidate that is like the polar opposite, they're not requesting hockey lessons from Wayne Gretzky. In fact, they're just like, I don't even know where to recruit or sorry, to start with my negotiation process because I don't understand what we should be paid and why. Pretty much the thesis of this whole podcast is discussing these things so that we can actually understand it and be more educated. Someone is trying to get a new job right now. They don't know where they should start with the whole entire process of what they should be compensated. What do they do? Where do they go?
Like how to know how much to get paid, you mean?
How much to know to get paid, a starting point and negotiating just like what you're seeing it every day. What are things they should do?
So there are free resources,
yep,
like Glassdoor would be one, or like Indeed has a salary section and you can put in sort of like where the city you live in based on years of experience. And but the ranges are sort of not super useful. It's like 50 to 200K. It's like not helpful. Okay. Two things I would say. One is there are salary transparency acts that have been put into place. So like British Columbia and Ontario, like you have to put it on the job posting now.
Yeah. There are certain states that have done that
which
too.
Yep. Yeah, so, and so, which is great. Yeah. Like New York has it now too. But I do think that again, people sometimes can make it broad.
Yeah.
So I think the best thing is to, one thing, if you're working with a recruiter like me, my job is to know market industries, like trends, what are we seeing? And so like my job is to advocate for the candidate and make sure they're being paid fairly and they have a competitive package. So your recruiter is on your side.
Okay.
So know that.
And the more you get paid, the more the recruiter gets paid,
I mean,
paid,
yes.
Right?
But to my clients, I do what's fair.
Yeah, of course.
But I do think like the goal here is to, I win if they win, which is great. But I think the beautiful thing about pay transparency is it shouldn't be a secret. I think these people legally being required to do it is so good. Like you have to assume that people internally are going to talk about how much they make.
Yeah.
So companies who don't take internal equity seriously, they're going to leave. Of course, if you and I are talking and we're in the same job and we have the exact same work experience and I find out you make 50K more than me, of course I'm going to go talk to someone about that. Right.
Yeah.
And so, but where to look? Yeah. There are free resources. It also probably will be posted now, which is great.
Okay.
And then if you work with a company like Lynchpin, we're here to advocate for you and tell you why and tell you how to negotiate. And so I think it can be scary asking for more money.
Yeah.
The way I like to operate, to be very honest, is like, I like to go out with the best offer.
Okay.
So I'll talk to my clients and be like,
give them the best.
I don't really let, it's like, don't come back and ask for 5K and then we do it. It's like, no, like, let's just say the highest we can go is 120K. We think you're worth that. This is the end.
Yeah.
And I actually find that more powerful than, it shouldn't be a game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really like you and I want to hire you.
This is what I want.
Great.
Yeah, let's do it.
And then you can still come back. Like there are little things that may be helpful for you that can be done. Like some companies don't start benefits until after a probation period.
Oh, interesting.
If you have a medication you need or that's really important to you, it's a very easy thing for companies to waive. So you could have that start day one. Ask some, I mean, unlimited vacation is more popular, but you could ask for more vacation.
Mm-hmm.
you could ask for, we talked about sign-ons. They're a little bit less common.
Yeah.
The more senior you get, sometimes we have them, but a lot of that is sort of making up. The most common time for a sign-on bonus is when you're like giving up, you're leaving equity on the table.
That makes sense.
And so they'll help keep you whole.
Give you cash.
Because you're quitting before your vesting period.
Okay. One thing you didn't say that I know my listeners put a huge value on the idea of prioritizing remote work. From recruiters, yes. I saw statistics that 84% of recruiters believe culture fit is one of the top factors when hiring. But additionally, 44% of recruiters are saying that they are prioritizing remote work options for their teams and for the people that they are working with from a candidate perspective.
Yep.
Are you seeing more companies eliminate the remote option? Are you encouraging companies to keep it? What does it look like?
Yeah, great question. I think obviously there's some jobs that have to be in person.
Yeah.
So that stays there.
Of course.
I would say from a candidate perspective, more people are interested in hybrid than fully remote now. And that's shifted a little bit. I think not myself personally, to be honest, I love being remote.
Yeah.
That's just how I operate. Nice. I love flexibility. That's part of why I started Lichpin, was to have flexibility.
Yep.
But I think I have like two clients maybe who are fully in-house, and it's a roadblock in recruiting. And so I'd say I encourage companies to give people flexibility. I kind of think the future of work is not 9 to 5, Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
I think
there's gonna be a big change.
We're coming into a place now, like even with my own team, I don't care where you are. Like even shout out Samantha, my director of recruitment. She's in Napa right now.
Yeah.
Having a great time.
Yeah.
But also she does her job. And if something isn't working, we'll talk about it. But
totally.
I think you're a grown up. You can choose how to use your time. And, you know, sometimes we work on the weekends because we didn't work on Tuesday. Like it's sort of like, I think companies should allow people to be flexible, and they will show up for you in a more powerful way.
That's how I manage my employees. The employees that are meeting all their metrics, I don't care where the hell you are. I don't care where you take the calls from.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're on a beach having a beer.
Yeah.
Just be
professional. You'll see when they're not performing.
Of course.
Right?
The proof is in your work, especially in roles like within a talent management company or a recruiting
If she's
agency,
not hiring anyone.
It's all there. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not hiring anyone, you're not placing deals. Like that's the end of the day. I mean, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
All right. So one thing, we know people that can search for jobs. You talked about LinkedIn, the social media. You can contact people directly. You can reach out to recruiters like Colleen at Lichpin. What about best advice for interviewing? So, you know, you want essentially like everything you want in your job is to make sure the candidates you bring to the table crush the interview so that they get placed and you get paid and the company's happy. What are top tips, top mistakes in interviewing?
Okay. The one thing I will say to remember is that the company wants to hire someone.
Okay.
So like for the, especially younger people who are nervous, just remember that on the other side, they're hoping you do well.
Mm-hmm.
They want it to go well. They want to fill the role. They're really hoping. But mistakes people make, I think, are bashing other companies.
Yep.
Like talking poorly about who you work for or people you've worked with. There's a better way to say, I hate my manager. You know, I think you can talk about, you know, I'm looking for an opportunity where I can continue to grow and not like, my manager will never promote me. Like there's different ways to learn how to articulate without putting people down.
Yeah.
Do some research. Like I think like companies want to know you want to work there, not just that you applied to 50 things. And so they're not expecting you to know every metric, but like be able to answer why that specific opportunity is exciting for you.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, it sounds so simple, but it's like, well, yeah, why do you want to work here? We want people who want to be a part of this culture.
Totally.
Yeah. And on the candidate side, looking for a job is exhausting and I see you and I feel you and we respond to everyone. I know a lot of people are getting ghosted, but I think like know that there's a ton of jobs. And also if you can connect with either a recruiting agency, but even if you go on LinkedIn, you can usually see who posted the job.
Yeah.
And if it's an internal person, you could reach out directly.
That's the way to do
it. If you know someone at a company, again, recruiters being lazy.
Yeah.
If someone refers someone to me.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
Great. I trust that guy. So he referred someone. So if you say you want to work at Tesla or Lululemon. If I know someone who works there, can I get them to bring my resume to the hiring manager specifically? Because then they're getting it directly from someone they trust. And also to companies, have referral programs.
Yeah,
that's huge. Pay your employees to refer people.
In.
Great people
especially
know great people.
Amazon's huge on that.
Yeah.
Like you pretty much can't get an interview at Amazon unless you're referred in by an employee.
Yeah.
And like, so that makes perfect sense.
Great people know great people. And I think like people want to work with people they like and they're not going to refer someone they don't think is bright or able to do the job. And so the best way to get in front of a recruiter is just if you can get an introduction from someone at the company.
Agree.
And even like for myself, even if they're not my client, I will always happily make an introduction to help someone.
Interesting.
So if I can be helpful, I'm happy to do it. I think that probably sounds counterintuitive to growing a business, but maybe one day they'll reach back out and be like, oh, I remember Colleen, she gave me someone for free essentially. And I just wanted to help someone. And then I've had that turn into clients before.
Interesting. Yeah. And I think from my standpoint in hiring, I agree with everything you said, but I think it's majority, I'd say more than 50% of the decision that I'm making is not what's from said, it's what I feel when it's said.
Yeah.
And it's so many non-tangibles. Like these days, especially everything's so virtual. Like, did you think to have a backlit scenario?
Right.
Know, did you make sure that everything is like clean? Did you wipe the camera off? Are you looking at me? Like, how did you dress? What's your energy feel like? Like, there's so many things that people get so focused on. I gotta say the exact right thing. And majority of the decision, I think, is made on not what's
it's actually like a gut instinct.
Yeah, even the tone, just how you're talking, yeah. All the things, how you conduct yourself, how, you know, you carry yourself. Like, it, there is so much to that. Now, I know that LinkedIn is a huge source, and yes. It looks like Linchpin offers, you guys offer a ton of services here, a LinkedIn profile audit for $150.
Yeah.
Resume refresh, it looked like $250. Yeah. Starting a small business checklist, $2,500. Obviously, you've done that extremely successfully. Recruitment scorecards were $4,250. I wanted to ask, what is a recruitment scorecard?
Yeah. So if you are trying to, this can kind of come from two things. The scorecards are also just a part. I've been hired to, like, some of our consulting services.
Yep.
I've been hired to come in and, like, how can I audit your current recruitment process? And then how can I help you make it more efficient?
Okay.
And the scorecard process is an element some people choose, and it just allows, so you have a screening interview, and then you have, say you're meeting with a hiring manager, and then you have a tech interview. If you don't put thought into what your process looks like, all those interviews end up being the same.
Yeah.
And then the candidate's, you know, telling me about your work history 12 times, and that's a waste of everyone's time. So the scorecard, it allows a few things, but we'll kind of come in with you and curate this to your needs. But it's like from a leadership perspective, where do they land on succession planning and building their teams? Or from a actual technical experience on the scorecard, have they done X, 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 and X? So it just allows you to have metric. It's data, it's numbers, facts.
Yeah.
And so it allows you to kind of create a process where you can have technical interviews, leadership interviews, and you kind of get a score.
Yeah.
And then it's like they need to hit 3.7 or whatever above to go to the next round. And then it's just, I find it most useful, to be honest, why we implemented it was like larger companies who have so many players.
Yeah.
It allows a process to be like
benchmarked,
easy. Just
right?
Like, you're like, okay, this person didn't hit this.
Yeah.
We're not going to move forward. Even though six of you want this, we're just going to, like, it needs to make sense for everybody.
Yeah.
But I would say more purchased, I guess, from a consulting perspective is actually just us coming in and auditing recruitment processes and help them make it more efficient, make it more lean, and make it more human. And like remembering, teaching people about basic communication. And we do interview bias training.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of even personality, like personal biases that come in. Like we do. We want to hire ourselves sometimes.
Yeah.
So sometimes the people that you're vibing with the best, you have to be like, wait, remember, am I just doing this because I like them?
Right.
Are they good at the job? But.
And we actually learned, like in our business class, we learned a lot about the fact that homogeneity in businesses, like hiring the same personality types and people, is actually extremely counterproductive to success.
You need different,
you have all the different scores on, you know, they have all the different tests now.
A lot of companies use those things as well. Or even just something like, I love StrengthsFinder or like Standout. It's a book you can buy and you can take these quizzes. And that's fun for small companies. If you can't afford Myers-Briggs or like larger things, you can do these smaller things. But if you hire everyone the exact same,
you're going to have
a bunch of dreamers who can't execute.
Yeah. And everyone's going to be like, probably butting heads too.
So a big fun like activity you can even think about when you're adding to a team is like, what are we great at and what are we missing? And then you can talk to your recruiter about like, we're actually missing someone who can do X.
Cool.
And we need that.
Yeah. I like that. And then I also read another stat just about new hires in general.
Okay.
69% of new hires will stay for 3+ years after a positive onboarding experience.
Yes.
And new hires are twice as likely to look for a new job after poor onboarding experience. So that whole idea of the, you know, the ghosting, the getting the employee up to speed at the right way, being, you know, not playing games through negotiating process, all these things, the proof is in the pudding that it leads to better employee engagement and employee success.
Onboarding for sure. Like I think even something as simple as having people's tech equipment at their house and ready.
Yeah.
Or I've worked for companies who have phenomenal onboarding experiences and companies who don't. I think it's like, it doesn't have to be like elaborate, but have them meet the people they need to meet, introduce them, take your team out for lunch if you're in person or you can organize it from a hybrid perspective. I think there's power in putting time and energy to setting your employees up for success. Yeah. If I come in and I don't really understand what's going on and I feel lost, I don't feel like you're organized as a company either. Yeah. And so if I come in and I show you that we value our people and your onboarding experience is positive, everything was smooth, you're cared about, we want to see you succeed, of course I'm going to stay.
Yeah, of course.
And you'll see turnover completely change if you, even just like one of the things, one of our services is we'll help you with your onboarding deck. If you're a small company and you have no onboarding, even just being able to have a simple deck that shares, here's who we are, here's how we operate. Even simple things like here's how you submit an IT help desk ticket. Like just things that feel common sense. A lot of companies don't take it seriously. And there are major brands who have like no onboarding and no wonder their turnover is so high.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah. Especially like when you think about the small startup companies, that is imperative. All right. That is the, you guys just heard everything from the founder of the Lynchpin Co. I think it's so cool how you did it, creating it while still working at a company and then focusing on it while you're on maternity leave and then turning prior companies that hired you into clients to your new company. And that is tactics and strategy that anyone can use in any industry, which is so fantastic. But this episode is more than money. So what I got to end with is your more than money magic. So not a money tip, not a finance tip, but it's kind of like, it could be a quote from your mistakes. It could be something that's inspired you. It's the magic that's more than money that's gotten to where you are starting this back in 2019, fast forwarding to 2024, all the growth you've had. What would you say is your magic that is not connected to money or finances?
Two things come to my brain immediately. One, don't keep relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's
don't burn bridges.
The simplest thing is like, even if you're exiting a company or whatever that looks like, I think relationship building is literally the reason Lynchpin worked or is working and continues to work, because I've taken the time to keep relationships. And like, we have a client who I hired him as an intern, and now he like years ago, and we've just kept in touch, and now he started his own company and now they're one of our clients as well. So I think keeping in touch is one. And then the second thing that came to mind was actually just recently, I saw Courtney Cox in an interview.
Okay.
And she talked about not using your high voice. Like, oh yeah, that's great. And it was like, no, it's either a hell yes or it's a hell no. And so when you're feeling, when you're making a decision or you're deciding who to work with or who to partner with, if there's doubt or there anything, just don't do it.
Yeah. I like
and
that.
Like, even from a personal perspective, if you don't want to do something, like you don't want to go out for dinner, don't.
Don't.
If it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no. So like, that's a good one too.
That is a really good one. All right, guys, that is unbelievable. Whether you're a candidate, you're looking for a LinkedIn profile audit, a resume refresh, or you just want to say hello to Colleen, you can go to thelinchpinco.com. If you are a company, they do full cycle recruitment, monthly recruiting subscription, sourcing, executive search. We heard all about that. Training, consulting, DEI audits, a customized program implementation, and more. And you can check out thelinchpinco.com. Colleen, for everyone here that wants to find you, that wants to reach out, that wants to say hello, where specifically can they go?
Yeah. So at the Lynchpin Co on Instagram, please come follow us and we'll answer every inquiry and we're here to help you. I think like remembering that there's a human side to business for both our clients and our candidates is what's going to be our superpower. So or our website. Yeah. Those are the two spots.
Or your 8,000 plus followers on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Come on LinkedIn or our like basic contact is just hello@thelinchpinco.com as well. If you want to reach out.
Amazing. Colleen, you said it yourself, the best. Great people know great people. So we have a huge deal for anyone out there. If you're looking to make passive income, this is a way to do it. You will get 10% off your first invoice with the first role that the Lynchpin Co. places for the company that you own or the company that you introduce the Lynchpin Co. to. So if you know anyone that needs recruiting services or you're a candidate and you just want to talk to Colleen, introduce yourself, make the introduction, and there could be kickback for you. And again, 10% off your first invoice with the first role that is placed for your company with the Lynchpin Co. Colleen, thank you so much for being on this episode of More Than Money.
Thank you so much. That was fun.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.